China could do something to solve this and come out of it for everybody in a more positive way, unless they fear freedom.
What might it take to bring Hong Kong protests to an end? We will explore that. This is Thursday, October 3rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also coming your way, just days before the scheduled resumption of talks with the United States, North Korea tests more missiles. Australia readies water deliveries to drought-parched areas. And a pet cat makes a Thai student in California a millionaire. All on today's VOA Asia. Hundreds of people held a vigil Wednesday outside the Hong Kong school of a young demonstrator shot by riot police during violent anti-Beijing protests Tuesday. The shooting and the escalating violence have raised concerns that the government is condoning the excessive use of force against pro-democracy protesters and that police officials are justifying lethal force by equating the protest with terrorism. VOA's Brian Patton has more from Hong Kong.
More than 100 people were injured during Tuesday's mass demonstrations in Hong Kong. Police fired water cannons and tear gas to disperse crowds, and some protesters armed with rocks and even homemade gasoline bombs attacked police. In one skirmish that was captured on video, an 18-year-old student was shot by a police officer. A police spokesman said the shooting was justified as the officer was being attacked by protesters and felt his life was under serious threat. This is the first time Hong Kong police used lethal force against the protesters. The student underwent surgery and is in critical condition at a Hong Kong hospital. On Wednesday, supporters of the student came to his school chanting, "Hong Kong people, hang in there." Some former students who gave only their last names and wore anti-pollution masks to conceal their identities expressed shock the conflict between protesters and police has escalated to this degree.
"I cannot expect anything after this event, but surely this is an unforgettable moment."
A former student named Chen disagreed with the police assessment that the shooting was justified.
"We do not agree that the police are using the right force to do to young protesters who obviously from the video he didn't do anything."
And an activist with a group called Citizens Press, who concealed his identity for fear of arrest, said the protesters would match the increased use of force by the police.
"With escalating oppression, we will only offer escalating resistance."
Supporters also gathered in front of a Hong Kong court to call for the release of over 180 protesters who were arrested during the demonstrations. The tens of thousands of Hong Kong residents who marched on Tuesday defied a government ban on demonstrations enforced as a show of support for China's ruling Communist Party anniversary celebration in Beijing. The pro-democracy movement succeeded in pressuring the government to withdraw an extradition law that would have given Beijing broad powers to arrest Hong Kong citizens. These groups now demand direct elections for all leaders rather than elite committees selecting half the legislature. Neither side in this dispute seems willing to compromise, even facing the prospect of increasingly violent clashes in the near future. Brian Patton, VOA News, Hong Kong.
As we continue on VOA Asia, you'll hear what a longtime expert and China observer has to say about the future of Hong Kong. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now at voanews.com. U.S. Special Envoy for Afghanistan Reconciliation Zalmay Khalilzad and Taliban political negotiators have arrived in Pakistan amid a renewed diplomatic push to resurrect peace talks between Washington and the insurgent group. Searchers have recovered four bodies. They're looking for another two people missing from three fishing boats that were struck when a bridge collapsed in Taiwan. Thousands of workers plan to carry out protests against Indonesia's labor, wage, and health insurance regulations, which they say are discriminatory, raising fresh risks for the stability of Southeast Asia's largest economy. Reuters reports the U.S. Department of Agriculture has so far paid farmers $14.3 billion of a promised $28 billion as compensation for the effects of the Washington trade war with China. VOA Asia continues. Protests that have turned many parts of Hong Kong into battlefields have been going on for about 4 months now. How long will these battles between the protesters and police go on? I spoke with someone who's been following and studying China for years. Jerome A. Cohen is a professor at the NYU Law School in New York, faculty director of the U.S. Asia Law Institute, and adjunct senior fellow for Asia at the Council of Foreign Relations. I asked him what he thinks of Beijing's reaction to the protest in Hong Kong.
Beijing is beset by a terrible dilemma. It doesn't know what to do. It's very much like everyone else involved in this problem except the protesters. It's like a deer in the headlights. They don't know what to do. They're immobilized. They're caught between the terror they feel in doing nothing, which is embarrassing, humiliating, and the terror they feel about doing something adequate to suppress the ferocity of the protesters, which would be the use of troops that would resemble in horrible ways the June 4th, 1989 massacre that they've been hoping the world would forget for so many decades. So they're caught.
Is there anything in between that you think might work for either side?
The leadership in China could do something to solve this and come out of it for everybody in a more positive way, unless they fear freedom. If former Prime Minister Zhu Rongji, for example, were available, I noticed he didn't go to the parade yesterday. He must not be well. If they had that kind of dynamic, able, enlightened, vigorous leadership, they could send somebody down from the Politburo who could take charge in Hong Kong, knock heads together in a figurative fashion, and try to have something come out of this that would have a positive outcome. For example, a real leader would take charge and appoint an independent commission, not a government-controlled commission, to investigate police misconduct, which is now growing by the day. This commission should have real power to summon witnesses, to subpoena evidence, so that the police could not just laugh it off. And the public would feel that this is a genuine investigation. But it would have to be an independent commission by people of impeccable ability and integrity, and Hong Kong has many of them.
But you don't think this is going to happen, correct?
I don't think it's going to happen, but it should happen. I've been arguing in this direction for months now, and the elite are simply caught. They're afraid to alienate the Beijing leadership, the elite in Hong Kong, and they're elite to do anything. They're afraid to do anything. So it's going to be a tragedy unless something strong happens. And I think the Hong Kong government has to combine this with enlightened treatment of now the many hundreds of people they have detained, the many hundreds of people they're going to prosecute. They have to announce and take steps to implement protection of all the people there they have in detention, some of whom have reportedly been mistreated. Coercion, incommunicado detention, torture, these are things we associate with mainland China, not Hong Kong. And the Hong Kong leadership has to make sure that such violations are not taking place as some have been reported.
How much longer do you think this can keep on going on the way it is?
I was taken aback and appalled by the ferocity, the intensity of the violent protesters. Street warfare was being waged. I saw a bit on TV, and I looked at the morning newspaper's front page photographs that looked like 18th century portraits of revolution in Europe. This is not something that's likely to go away. Until now, Beijing has been hoping that this movement would dissipate the way that the 2014 umbrella movement finally did. People will get worn out after 17 weekends of protest in the rain and the heat. They'll just get tired, especially when you lock up some of the leaders and threaten others. This has worked in the past, but it doesn't seem like it's going to work now, at least for the foreseeable future. So unless some enlightened steps are taken to bring the conflicting groups together, I think what we're going to see is a resort to the troops from the People's Republic that are already stationed in Hong Kong, because the local police are proving demoralized, they're stretched too far, and inadequate to curb large-scale dispersed violence. And if that doesn't work, I think there will be emergency declaration that will be the equivalent of martial law. And you will then have troops brought in from Shenzhen across the border in the People's Republic. And I think the situation will be for a long time a dreadful one, because martial law can be not only the imposition of military suppression of all demonstrations, but it can mean censorship for the press. It can mean an end to all public activity. And then you'll have Hong Kong subjected to a lockdown similar to that which exists every day on the mainland. And that mainland situation, after all, is the cause of what's taking place in Hong Kong. People don't want to be like the mainland.
NYU Law Professor Jerome A. Cohen joining us on Skype from New York City. Happening now in Asia, India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi paid tribute to the father of the nation, Mahatma Gandhi, on the 150th anniversary of his birth at his memorial in New Delhi Wednesday. India observes October 2nd not only as Gandhi's birthday, but also as International Day of Nonviolence, the ideal that Gandhi fought for throughout his life. This is VOA Asia. North Korea has tested what appears to be a submarine-launched ballistic missile. As VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul, that's an important advancement in Pyongyang's weapons program and a major provocation just days ahead of working-level nuclear talks with the United States.
It is North Korea's 11th ballistic missile test since May. But this launch is notable for several reasons. Unlike other tests this year, this one does not appear to be short-range, though the actual maximum range isn't clear. And it may have been fired from a submarine, making it easier to hide and harder to intercept. The launch also came just hours after North Korea announced long-delayed working-level talks with the United States. Those talks are set for Saturday. Former U.S. diplomat Mintaro Oba says it is not unusual for the North to send mixed messages.
The North Koreans have a long history of juggling carrots and sticks. They combine these launches that raise tensions with what we'd call charm offensives, and that's exactly what we saw today.
But Oba says North Korea may be emboldened by President Donald Trump, who has said he has no problem with North Korea's past short-range launches.
The North Koreans see someone unique, someone new in President Trump, someone who might be more flexible about their missile launches. And so they see a golden opportunity to normalize these shorter-range missile launches, even while negotiations are ongoing.
It is not clear if Trump will be able to shrug off this test, the same as he did the others. Others in the region are expressing concern. South Korea's government voiced strong concern at the launch. Japanese Prime Minister Abe Shinzo said the launches violate United Nations Security Council resolutions. Abe is likely to be especially upset at the latest launch, as one of the missiles landed in Japan's exclusive economic zone. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Coming up, the drying of Australia. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, the UN Refugee Agency said Wednesday it was holding talks with India about its citizenship register in the border state of Assam, that amid concerns that many people, the majority of them Muslims, could join the ranks of the world's stateless. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. Senior government ministers in Australia have begun a three-day tour of towns on the brink of running out of water in drought-hit areas in the eastern part of the nation. Phil Mercer has more from Sydney.
Authorities are racing to get emergency water supplies ready for the town of Stanthorpe in the Australian state of Queensland, where reservoirs are expected to run dry within 2 months. The community, 220 kilometres from Brisbane, is one of the stops for two senior government ministers, Treasurer Josh Frydenberg and Water Minister David Littleproud, who are starting a three-day tour of drought-affected regions in eastern Australia. Two emergency water tanks are being installed in Stanthorpe. They'll be supplied by 50 truckloads that will be transported 70 kilometres every day at a cost of more than $500,000. Residents are living under some of Australia's toughest water restrictions and are limited to 100 litres each per day. The local mayor is Tracy Dobie.
Water's like gold. I think that's the way we look at water now. This has been a hard lesson, but it's been a really valuable lesson for us to learn in regard to how we use water.
Rainfall in August was below average for much of eastern Australia, and more warm, dry conditions are forecast for the months ahead. Most of the nation's most populous state, New South Wales, is under drought conditions, as are large parts of Queensland. The Victorian government Wednesday announced $20 million in aid for drought-hit farmers in the driest parts of the state. Federal financial assistance is also available. Australia is the world's driest inhabited continent. Last summer was the hottest ever recorded. Conservationists say climate change is likely making drought conditions in southwestern and southeastern Australia worse. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This news break from VOA Asia, South Korea Wednesday confirmed two additional cases of African swine fever at pig farms in Paju, a town near its border with North Korea. The country's agricultural minister said that, bringing the total number of cases of the disease to 11, South Korea is still looking into the source of that virus. This is VOA Asia. Millionaire businesswoman Varisia Mehta Jitapan is an immigrant success story. She started out in the U.S. as a typical Thai student, eager to study and enjoy new experiences. Then she adopted Nayla, a five-month-old kitten from a shelter in California. What happened next is pure internet magic. VOA's Roncalla Chalchuan tells their story.
Nala is obsessed with boxes. She loves napping in them and absolutely hates it when she's on the wrong side of the doors. Sounds like any cat on the planet, except she's not. She's the internet's most famous cat, with more than 4 million followers on Instagram and millions of dollars under her paws. Nala's fame has forever changed her owner's life, from a Thai graduate student in the U.S. to a millionaire businesswoman, a social media success story.
I never thought my cat will have millions of followers. It never occurred to me that I would be doing this for 5 years.
Varisiri Metha Chittipan, who goes by Pukki, was a 23-year-old business student at UCLA when she visited a shelter in California.
I didn't plan to adopt, but I saw Nala in the cage, looking so adorable. I felt a strong connection. When I picked her up, she licked my face, my nose, so I decided to adopt her.
Pukki named the Siamese and tabby mix Nala after a lead character in The Lion King. Then she did what wasn't so common way back in 2012. She created an Instagram account for Nala and shared some photos.
I wanted to challenge myself and see how many followers I can cultivate. That wasn't a day that I didn't post, and her fan numbers kept growing.
Within a year, Nala's followers jumped to about 700,000. That's when companies began paying Pukki to show Nala interacting with their products. Expanding Nala's fan base and working with brands quickly became Pukki's full-time job after graduation.
My family wanted me to go home. My dad once asked me, what could you possibly do with just a cat?
With Nala, quite a bit. She brought home $300 for her first gig. Now, some companies pay as much as $15,000 for a few photos posted across platforms. The 9-year-old cat also bought Pukki a car and 2 houses in California. Took Pukki on a red carpet movie premiere in Hollywood.
Nala the cat!
And to numerous talk shows and events. In September, she met Pukki, now 32, CEO of her cat food enterprise. It's all part of maintaining the brand, as other pet influencers, dogs, pigs, even hedgehogs, line up to compete for corporate dollars. Pukki says she's not worried because right now, Nala's followers keep growing. And Nala, she's just living her best life, sitting in a box or two and pushing through closed doors, all in a day's work. Warangkana Chomchun, VOA News.
Time to go out and buy a little kitten. That's cute. Global trade is forecast to weaken this year to its slowest pace since the depths of the Great Recession, that due to the U.S.-China trade war, according to the World Trade Organization. WTO said it expects volumes of traded goods to rise 1.2% in 2019, well below the 2.6% estimate it issued in April and the weakest growth rate for world trade since 2009.
This is Science in a Minute.
The World Health Organization says the emergence and rapid growth of antibiotic-resistant bacteria, known as superbugs, are a serious worldwide health concern. Most scientists have placed the blame in the rise of antibiotic-resistant bacteria on the overuse of antibiotics to treat both humans and livestock for various ailments. New research conducted by British and Spanish scientists have found evidence that cigarette smoke can cause MRSA superbug strains to become even more resistant to antibiotics. The researchers found that the cigarette smoke stresses MRSA superbugs. The stress causes the already antibiotic-resistant bacteria to send out emergency signals, which increases the rate of mutation in microbial DNA that produces robust and tenacious variants that can better resist antibiotics. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Thank you for being with us. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud and download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Visit our VOAnews.com program page and see us on YouTube. Follow us on VOA Asia Twitter. Our thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Carl Starling, and our managing editor, Diane Gal, along with our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and interns, Hayoung and Afra. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day.